Wait, are we missing? No, we got Brad. Who are we missing here? Oh, we're missing a chair. Good evening, everyone. We will reconvene the Lawrence Douglas County Metropolitan Planning Commission for April 28th meeting. And Denny wanted me to remind everybody, item number 9, the text amendment for the MU district has been deferred. So if you were here for that, it's been deferred. When's that been deferred to, Scott?
We're trying to bring it back to you in May.
May. Okay, so just an FYI if you're in the crowd here for the mixed-use district. Mr. McCullough, any written communications since? Okay. Any?
No.
No, item 6, we went ahead and heard last
you were here.
Monday. You were here.
You
it was about 11 o'clock at night. So. Disclosure of any ex parte communications? Any abstentions? Very good. Seeing none. Amy, are we ready for item number 7? This is the environmental chapter, which I'm sure many of you are here for.
Good evening, everyone. The item is for presentation of CBA 2008-7, a comprehensive plan amendment to Horizon 2020 to include Chapter 16, Environment. The presentation this evening will lead you through the April 2010 draft and also explain a bit about the timeline and the process that got us to this point. Mary Miller and I have been working with the Comprehensive Plans Committee since this chapter was initiated in April of 2008. The CPC and staff started meeting in September of 2008 regarding an outline, timeline, and process, and also developed a draft overview and strategies during that time. Those drafts were then presented to the Planning Commission in November of 2008 in order to gain input from the public, but also the Planning Commission. A series of educational meetings were then held on various subtopics of the chapter. Community organizations, researchers, and other experts in their fields were invited to give brief presentations to the group in order to help educate us on certain issues. Staff and the CPC then worked over the next months to develop the draft that is before you today. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank both Mary Miller and the CPC for their work on this chapter. A good place to start is explaining how the chapter is organized. The chapter covers a wide range of subjects and is divided into sections for different environmental categories, such as water and land resources. Within each section, there are three components: an introduction, which presents a broad overview of each topic; a summary of issues, which provides a brief discussion of those topics; goals and policies, which present long-range goals of the community and identify specific courses of action in order to achieve those goals. The chapter starts with an overview and strategies section, and then there are six main sections that follow that cover topics such as water resources, land resources, air resources, resource management, waste management, and human and built environment. And the chapter ends with a glossary. The chapter starts with the overview and strategies section that acts not only as an introduction for the reader, but also ties the entire chapter together. This section also contains overall strategies for the chapter, an example of which would be establish effective incentives and regulations that promote sustainable and efficient management of environmental resources. This section also contains components regarding chapter organization and chapter utilization, which help tell the reader how the information will be presented and how it will be used. The water resources and management section focuses on water quality, flooding, and recreation as outlined in the summary of issues. The goals and policies deal with drainage areas, including watershed and water quality protections, surface water courses, including a policy dealing with the development of stream setback regulations, preserving and protecting wetlands, stormwater management, and floodplains. Two maps are included in this section. The first one shows drainage areas for the city of Lawrence and parts of the UGA. Staff is planning on modifying the drainage areas map to include name labels for those watersheds that are named, ridge lines for the Kansas and Wakarusa rivers, and adding tributaries to this map. This is in response to conversations between representatives of the League of Women Voters and our stormwater engineer, Matt Bond. In addition, staff is planning on modifying all of the maps in the chapter to include the boundaries for other incorporated areas in Douglas County. The second map in the water resources section shows surface water courses and floodplain areas countywide. The land resources and management section focuses on the creation and promotion of an open space network that includes topography, rural woodlands and urban forests, native prairies, endangered species, wildlife habitats, and other land resources. Goals and policies of note are the development of an inventory and map for woodlands, urban forest areas, native prairies, and critical habitat areas. Also, policy 2.6 focuses on open space preservation by maintaining existing areas, creating new areas, and having them all be part of an interconnected network. Policy 2.7 focuses on the protection of high-quality agricultural land for current and future agricultural use. This section includes two maps, one that shows slopes and the other that shows high-quality agricultural land in Douglas County. The air resources and management section focuses on air quality, including outdoor air pollution, greenhouse gases, and indoor air pollution. Goals and policies of note include improving air quality by reducing emissions through reductions in the number of vehicle miles traveled, encouraging the use of energy-efficient vehicles, reducing non-vehicular air toxics, reducing greenhouse gases, and improving indoor air quality through building codes and education. The resource management section focuses on the responsible use of marketable natural resources, such as gravel, sand, and stone. Goals and policies deal with the proper management in order to ensure their sustainable use. The waste management section focuses on the proper management of waste, proper disposal of solid and hazardous waste. Goals and policies deal with the promotion of sustainable principles, including reduce, reuse, and recycle, as well as the proper disposal of the hazardous waste. The Human and Built Environment section focuses on how environmental protections can impact the human and built environment by creating a sustainable and livable community. The section focuses on sustainability, healthy and active lifestyles, and a local food program. Goals and policies deal with noise and light pollution, the promotion of the healthy and active lifestyles, sustainable transportation and building practices, and the conservation of water, energy, and other natural resources. There is a website that has been set up that acts as a central hub for information regarding this chapter and now includes the April 2010 draft. In addition, an email distribution list has been created to keep people informed about the chapter as it moves through the process. Members of the public can sign up for that email list at the city's subscription site. The list currently contains approximately 250 email addresses. Two emails have gone out to that list over the last month informing them of the process and tonight's Planning Commission meeting. Written comments on the plan were due by the 10 a.m. Monday, April 26th Planning Commission deadline for inclusion in the packet. To date, we have received 7 items of written communication, which were all included in your packet. Tonight, staff is asking for oral comments from members of the public and from commissioners on this draft. Based on those comments, staff would recommend that the commission direct staff to incorporate some of those changes and bring a draft back for consideration at the Planning Commission's June meeting. I know that Mary and I, as well as any CPC members, would also be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Amy. Questions for staff at this time, or do we want to just jump into public comment and then I'm sure if we have questions, we can move from there. Okay. Thank you. At this time, it's time for public comment. If you represent a group, 5 minutes are allowed, 3 minutes for an individual, and just come on up and state your name and we'll get started.
Good evening. My name is Tom Hunsinger. I represent the Watershed Restoration and Protection Strategy. There are two watersheds that are under this program defined by the state. One is the Upper Wakarusa, which is the drainage into Clinton Lake, and the other is the lower part of the Kansas River Basin. I just wanted to note for the record that we did, in fact, submit written comments and met the deadline. We were satisfied, basically, that this chapter was well done, and the document sufficiently met our needs in the RAPS program. We do appreciate the fact that it does acknowledge the RAPS program and your efforts to be consistent with our efforts to protect Clinton Lake as a water supply, as well as the Kansas River, and to also protect the recreational destination of Clinton Lake. I don't believe that there's any reason for me to make any more comments. Most of our comments I would consider to be refinements to the document, so appreciate very much the opportunity to comment on this document. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Huntsinger. Any questions for the speaker? Thanks for your comments, and thanks for getting them to us.
Sure.
In written form, that's certainly helpful in the process. Next speaker.
My name is Alan Black, and tonight I am just speaking for myself. You may know I'm chair of the Land Use Committee for the League of Women Voters, but the comments I've been going to make tonight have not been approved by the League. Okay, they're strictly my own opinions. Okay, there are two topics I want to bring up that are not covered in this chapter. The first is power production, which mostly means generation of electricity. Most of the electricity in this area comes from Westar Energy's coal-fired plant. A small amount comes from the Bowersock Dam, and a few farmers have windmills. I'm sure you're aware that coal-fired plants contribute to global warming and air pollution. You know about the controversy over building some new coal-fired plants in western Kansas. A comprehensive plan doesn't usually deal with this subject. Now, we are dependent on the Westar plant, and it will be operating for a long time. But the plan could encourage generation of electricity from the wind and the sun. I wouldn't mention nuclear generation since there is controversy over whether it is desirable or not. My second topic. In an urban area such as the city of Lawrence, a high percentage of the land is covered, some of it by buildings, but much of it by pavement, mostly in the form of concrete or asphalt. This increases the runoff of water, which spreads pollutants to adjacent ground and may contribute to flooding. This also decreases the amount of ground where plants and flowers can grow, and it may have adverse effects on some animals. A high percentage of this pavement is intended for parking. You have seen the immense parking lots on South Iowa and West 6th Streets. There are lots of empty spaces, except during Thanksgiving weekend and the week before Christmas. To a large extent, the amount of parking is determined by minima specified in the Land Development Code. If the code were revised to reduce the amount of required parking, it would be very beneficial for the environment. This goal could be stated in the comprehensive plan. Of course, reducing the use of private motor vehicles and increasing travel by public transit and bicycles would also help by lowering the demand for parking. I do not have any specific language to propose for the chapter at this time. I just want the commission and planning staff to give thought to these topics in the future. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Black. Any, Mr. Rasmussen has a question for you, I think.
Mr. Black, do you understand that electricity that we use in our homes cannot be, doesn't come necessarily from the Lawrence Power Plant, that the electricity on the grid in the Southwest Power Pool is provided by the Lawrence Power Plant, the Tecumseh Power Plant, the Lacine Power Plant, the Jeffrey Energy Center, the Wolf Creek Nuclear Power Plant, the wind turbines in the western part of the state, and that you can't trace the electrons that are generated in one power plant to where you're using them at the end user.
No, I'm not very expert on that subject.
So when you
most of this power generated from coal
at the Lawrence plant and the Tecumseh plant and the Jeffrey Energy Center and the Lacine plant, yes, at the Wolf Creek plant, it's a nuclear plant. At the Gordon Evans plant in Hutchison, it's gas-powered. Here at Bowersock, it's water. There's a variety of power sources. There's wind turbine projects. So I just, when you single out a particular power plant, I just want to make sure you understand that that is providing power to the grid. Those electrons go throughout the whole grid. So I'm not sure what we would do to single out that particular facility. What would be your suggestion?
No, I'm not really familiar with that interchange. I had just mentioned that because it is the local plant. And basically, I think the problem comes from the use of coal, which, you know, has been cited throughout the country. Natural gas may be slightly more desirable, but I think it has some problems as well.
And what would you suggest we should be including in here about those?
Well, I don't think that you can eliminate these plants anytime, you know, in the near future. But I think, you know, the plan could try to encourage the use of wind and sun. I don't think there's much opportunity for hydroelectric power here. This is a national problem, you know, and I don't know if I just
I think if we
watched did. On the news broadcast tonight, and in Massachusetts, they have just approved building wind towers off in the ocean off of Cape Cod, okay, which had been controversial for many years. And Ted Kennedy had opposed this and basically stopped it because the Kennedy family has a summer home in Hyannisport, and he said it would hurt the view that they have from their home and would also hurt the tourist industry. So Senator Kennedy has died now, and I don't know if that's why, but somehow I think today the state has approved building of those. And if I have traveled to Europe, and I'm sure some of you have as well, and they're in the ocean off some of the countries like the Netherlands and Denmark, there are just huge numbers of wind towers generating electricity.
I think if we haven't done a good job of putting in some language to encourage the use of wind generation and solar in the city, that's something we should make sure we do. I think that's a good suggestion.
I don't think that is mentioned in this chapter at all.
That's something we should revisit then. Thank you.
That's what I wanted.
Thank you, Mr. Block. Amy, I think you and I went to a class in Minnesota that talked about some rural applications for wind power and solar power. Next speaker, please.
Evening, Commission. My name is Brian Sifton. I'm a member of the Sustainability Advisory Board, and I work for JW Prairie Wind Power. So on that topic of wind, if you want some ideas, let us know. Any comments I make tonight don't reflect the views of the Sustainability Advisory Board as a whole. In fact, if my colleagues make comments, we might disagree. These are just sort of my comments as a private citizen. On the first and second reading of it, as a high-level document, it's a very good document. All the main sort of environmental interests are represented for the most part. Obviously, there might, as Professor Black's comments made clear, energy might have been left out a little bit, but for the most part, all the main topics get hit and covered, and it's good to see sort of the values embedded in the document and the, you know, beginnings of goals and policies being developed. As a member of the Sustainability Advisory Board, I'd like to say that we would certainly have a lot of synergies if we got a chance to work on the air resources management and waste reduction portions as ordinances and policies get vetted out to a greater extent. We've spent quite a bit of time working on pay-as-you-throw with the City Commission, and we're hoping to have a study session with them this session, before summer, hopefully. And we spent a lot of time working on the Climate Protection Task Force and that document. And so as this document transfers into where the tires hit the road, so to speak, we would be more than happy to spend a lot of time working with you guys, making sure that the policies and ordinances being developed are appropriate for Lawrence and Douglas County, and do what sustainability is supposed to do and maintain economic growth while preserving environmental quality. And I think that's my comments. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sifton. Any questions for the speaker? Thank you. Commissioner Hurd has it.
I have to ask you a question about wind generation.
Yes.
Since you're here.
And I'm new, so I might not know the answer.
My wife's family is from Ellsworth County. Mm-hmm. And north of I-70, there are wind generators and mm-hmm. a wind farm. South of I-70, they absolutely prohibited them by the county. There seems to be a disagreement among environmental groups, mm-hmm. as well as those who are more interested in the scenic value, mm-hmm. as to whether these are or are not a good idea. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to imagine them being worse than a coal mine. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we have people that are deeply vested in environmental concerns, mm-hmm. who are sharply divided over this. How can we, as a planning commission, how should we approach that?
I was an environmental science student up at KU, and I think that's been one of the most interesting things as environmentalism has come to the forefront in the last 30 years, is the divisions between environmentalists on particular issues. And I think, as you pointed out, energy has been one of the more interesting on those, because you can say the same thing about nuclear power. A lot of environmentalists are saying, well, it reduces the amount of carbon dioxide that's put into the atmosphere. That's a good thing. Obviously, it also creates a lot of toxic waste for the future. Same thing with wind turbines. They take generators off the grid, but they produce megawatt hours that aren't potentially produced by a coal generating power plant. However, view sheds are damaged. Some people think they look great and they're high tech and they're cool looking, and some people think that they kill bats and they hurt their ears and they don't look good. So I would say if this board spends a significant amount of time looking into the issue of renewable energy production in the county, I would spend quite a bit of time finding out what your constituents' interests are, because you can't make assumptions about what people's interests are as it relates to renewable energy. It's fortunate, it's unfortunate, it is what it is, but I would recommend doing a significant amount of outreach. And I don't know, I'll be honest, I literally just started working at JW full-time about a month ago. I don't know if wind studies have been conducted for Douglas County. I don't know, I mean, generally, we assume that the wind's better out west than it is here in the east, but you never know. There's pockets in just about every place in the country where it would be appropriate. So,
follow-up question. I'm not trying to put you on the spot necessarily, but what I struggle with here is, if this is an issue where we shouldn't make assumptions about what our constituents think on this subject, how do we approach this from a policy perspective in writing this draft? My instinct is to encourage alternative fuels, including mm-hmm. wind production. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, I mean, just the, because I'm sold on it doesn't mean it really is the right decision.
Sure, absolutely.
And I'm, as a policy matter, and as a scientist, how do you think we should approach this from a policy perspective if we don't have any data or information about how the constituents view this? But how do we achieve our best answer here?
You could do it from a couple different perspectives. You could do it from a ground-up perspective, or you could do it from a top-down perspective. I would suggest the ground-up would be similar to what was done for this particular plan, where drafts are created, they're vetted by the public, they're vetted through interest groups in the community, and then you see sort of what bubbles up to the top as far as reasonable policy, what can be supported, what agenda items can you place on, you know, any particular planning commission meeting that you can, will find support for. I mean, there will always be opposition to nearly any policy. That's just sort of the nature of the beast. And you could go about it in that route. The alternative is you could say, well, is it even possible? Is it feasible for Douglas County? Would there be wind developers interested in coming to Douglas County? Were the ordinances in place? Were the tax incentives in place? If the conditions were right, would they come? And so you could start by saying, is it even feasible? And that would be doing a wind energy analysis. And if, you know, I'll be honest, I don't know what the cost on those is, but if it's not an issue as a result of geophysical characteristics, then why even bring it up with the public?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, one's more cost-intensive and one's more time-intensive. So,
Commissioner Rasmussen has a question.
On page 16-30, we do have a recommendation in here that we develop regulations and incentives for the use of renewable energy sources. Mm-hmm. But we didn't single out any particular renewable energy sources.
Which is appropriate.
Sure. To select wind over solar, over geothermal, over some sort of biofuel production. It's probably, we don't have the expertise to be making that call, in my opinion. And to follow up on your question about wind, not necessarily view sheds, I mean, that's one opposition, but wind turbines can affect weather radars, the NOAA weather system, and have. There are two permanent storms on the weather radar on either side of Dodge City now from wind turbines. They can impact and disrupt defense radar. They can interfere with flight training routes for the Department of Defense. They do kill bats. The large wind turbines do. And it's my understanding that it's the pressure change as the bat flies through that can rupture the lungs of the bat. The thought is now that the wind turbines are interfering with the nesting habits of the prairie chicken, which is potentially, there's concern about it being a threatened or endangered species, because the prairie chickens evolved, the theory is that the prairie chickens evolved in an area, the Great Plains, without trees. They see this turbine, they don't want to nest near it because they view it as a potential hiding place for predators. So there's plenty of opposition. There's plenty of good things about wind turbines. They don't emit air pollutants. They do have a big footprint. They're going to have a bigger footprint than a coal plant to generate the same amount of electricity. So there's lots of pros and cons, but I guess as we were drafting this, I'm not sure that we felt that had the technical wherewithal to pick one technology over another, and so we just had a more generic statement in here.
And I think for this document, that is most certainly appropriate. It seems like we get in a lot of trouble when policymakers start picking technologies if they're not engineers. And so I think the language that's included in the document is wholly appropriate. But recognizing that if it's something that the county is interested in looking in, a quick review of existing technologies in terms of cost and relative to output, I think the number of technologies that we're realistically talking about shrinks pretty quickly. So,
right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, yeah. I might just add too. I mean, I can appreciate this discussion because it's we get plenty of inquiries about, can I do a windmill in my backyard? What are the standards and rules for solar panels on structures? We've spoken to industries about a larger scale production of on-site electricity, for example. We're aware of the partnership between the city and KU about biofuels, all those things. And so there's sort of a very specific level to this discussion, and then kind of a broader, all the way out to the national debate about energy. And so I just wanted to bring that up too, as well.
Thank you.
And I think that we are going to see more people interested in putting, say, photovoltaics, incorporating those into the building of a new structure, or adding them to existing structures, or some sort of solar, passive solar type action on rooftops. And do we really have any ordinances to deal with that at this point? Building codes?
The building codes certainly do. And in fact, the building codes have strengthened considerably in terms of its energy efficiency mandates. But it gets a little bit more interesting when we're talking about something that may not be on the roof. It takes up a backyard plot of ground. The some of the studies or ordinances I've seen where cities have implemented ordinances that talk about private windmills, for example, they repeal them. Some of them have been repealed because of the impacts of noise and aesthetics and interference. So there are impacts in an urban setting that we need to look at. But we've got this energy issue is a big one. As you know, next month you'll be considering the Bowersock expansion, which is our hydroelectric expansion. So we try to balance those things, and there's a lot of good creative energy in the community for geothermal now. It's even in the private residence we see people using those systems, and so I can appreciate that creative energy is out there wanting to do things, even if they're experimental. But I think the technology is getting to the point where they can be used in a much more efficient and widespread manner. When you think about where satellite TV has come with their 12-foot diameter dishes down to the, you know, meter or half a meter dish, same thing with some of this energy. I think we're going to see very small ways of getting green energy, and we need to be prepared for it. And I don't feel like we're as prepared as we need to be. In fact, it's on your list of text amendments that you approved last May. It's on that list to initiate amendments to the code to look at energy use for the city.
Great. Next speaker.
My name is Barbara Clark, and I'm with Citizens for Responsible Planning, but I'm not sure that I'm necessarily speaking for them this evening. And I did submit a comment note to you folks. And truly, I do want to just say it was a great inclusive process, I felt, that took on this amazingly broad base of information that you've amassed here. I think I went over just a couple of very incidental comments on the document. One was on page 16, and I don't know, perhaps you don't even want me to take time to go through this verbally now, but I think there's two or three.
Yeah, you go, that's fine.
One is on page 1616, and it's policy 1.7, and the very initial statement there, I had hoped that perhaps you could change the last from an or, let's see, I've just got such fine print here. It's, I think, current or future agricultural use, and I was hoping that perhaps that could be and rather than one or the other. And it may actually
you,
be, when you read that, Amy, you may have said and, I think.
You said 1.7.
16.
Oh, 16.
You're on policy 2.7?
Mm-hmm. 1.7.
Yes. She said 1.7, but I think she
did I say 1.7? I apologize.
2.7. Okay.
Okay.
She said 1.7.
It's 276.
2.7. Okay.
And then I know this is just a hierarchy of language again, but on A, protection of high-quality agricultural land, I'll just push for a shall rather than a should, knowing that I may not get that, but... and then again, on C, I was hoping that perhaps you would consider, you're talking about advanced effective economic systems related to agri and ecotourism, and a sustainable local regional food system. Would seem that might be a continuation of that same thought process. And then the only other point that I had was, let's see, that is on 16-24 policy, and again, forgive me, I think it's 4.1. Make sure when I get there. Where you're talking about the sand and gravel resources, a mapping system, and that's where I sent you the documentation on some communications that I'd had with Professor Ludwig with the Kansas Geologic Survey, and about a funding currently that's going to be given to Professor Johnson to do Kansas River alluvial deposits surveying that I'm not an expert. I think there's such a broad base to the information that's required to make this chapter as effective as it can be that perhaps using him as an expert to come up with a mapping system that you could then use a GIS overlay of capability class 1 and 2 soils might just be a way to mitigate some conflict down the road, which is something I know I always look for. And I guess the other thing, again, I think you'll perhaps hear more on this, but I feel very fortunate that there's language in here that addresses the local food system. I think that was sort of a glint in the eye of several people for a while when we had Ken Meter come here, whenever that was, 2 or 3 years ago now, talking about the economic development aspects of local foods. I really appreciated seeing that in here, and that's the point I'd like to make. So thank you all extremely much.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Mm-hmm. Any questions? Okay, we got a couple questions, looks like. Commissioner Harris, and then Commissioner Rasmussen. Yes.
Barbara, you might have mentioned this in your communication, and if so, I apologize. But do you know how long that alluvial study is going to take?
I don't know. I think we could probably get that information relatively quickly, but I don't have any handle on that. And I didn't presume to contact Professor Johnson with any level of interest. I don't know, Lisa, I'm afraid.
Did you have one, or were you telling me?
No, I have
okay.
One also.
Okay.
Ms. Clark, on the local food program,
mm-hmm.
My personal opinion is that this really belongs in Chapter 12 and doesn't have much to do with the environmental chapter. And I think it should be in the economic development chapter of Horizon 2020 instead of the environment chapter. And I'm just wondering if you could tell me why I'm wrong. Persuade me that it should stay in this chapter and not be moved to this language be moved to Chapter 12.
My thought about that is that our local food system is totally integrated with our land resources, and the preservation of capability class 1 and 2 soils is one of the true underpinnings of establishing and expanding on a local food or local regional food system. I don't think you can't integrate them. And the other thing that I think makes it applicable to this chapter is the local healthy. I mean, there are other things that I know Marilyn Hull has discussed about, like Live Well Lawrence, that there are local food system issues addressed in that. I don't see why it isn't tied to this particular chapter for a number of reasons, not just the land, actually.
Well, we have separate language on class 1 and class 2 soils and high quality agricultural soils, but the language in here on the local food program says encourage zoning laws to permit community gardens, mm-hmm. farmers markets, and promote growing and marketing local food in an urban setting. And to me, that sounds more like economic development type stuff rather than preservation of Class 1 and Class 2 soils when we're focused in on a urban setting and community gardens.
Well, so, I don't think just an urban setting isn't going to be sufficient to do a local food system. It might be adjunct to it, but it certainly isn't, it's not going to be comprehensive enough to address an entire local food system.
I think that's a good point. Thank you.
Commissioner Hurt.
Barbara, this is not so much a question for you as a response to Stan. I noticed in policy 6.7, which is on page 16-30, there is a reference to further addressing that in chapter 12 as an economic development issue.
I know I insisted we put that in there. But I really question the need for this particular policy period to be, is it really environmental? Is a local food program where we're growing food locally and trying to get it to the hospital and the schools, to me that's a local food program, and I really question whether that's an environmental program. To me that's more of an economic program, and so I think it would be more appropriate in that chapter, and that's why I'm looking, when she brought it up, I'm looking for, okay, why should it stay in here?
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Clark.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Next speaker.
Hello, my name is Daniel Poole. I am on the Sustainability Advisory Board for the city, and I'm on the Local Food Policy Council. But I'm not speaking for either one of those. Mr. Rasmussen, it should be in both chapters. Absolutely, it should be in the environmental chapter, because what we talk about, preserving the human and built environment, the human environment includes health outcomes, which I think local food has and could have a greater health outcome for citizens of Douglas County and the city of Lawrence. So I think that's why it should be in the environmental chapter, because I do think it helps protect us as human beings and our health. So that's one of my things that I'd like to say. As far as the energy discussion goes, I would have to agree. I think there's probably trade-offs with anything that you're going to do to produce energy. I couldn't tell you exactly what harmful effects photovoltaic panels have, but they probably do have something. But yeah, that's why I'm glad we're not trying to sell a specific system in this. And overall, I would say that this chapter is well written. One of the things I might ask for is actual benchmarks that would say something like recycling rates or energy production by alternative energy sources by a certain date, a certain percentage. But other than that, I'm pretty happy with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Poole. Any questions? Great, thank you. Next speaker.
Get a second chance, just real
sure.
quick.
Sure, okay. Yeah, we got time.
Sort of related to the economic development versus environment chapter for the local food production, and I agree it should be in the economic development section, but we have to remember that there's spillover effects and spillover benefits to the environment if food is produced locally, and the energy required to transport food, say from California or Belize to Lawrence, Kansas, reduces potentially the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, any other emissions from the transportation sector in delivering our food. I just wanted to respond to that. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Hurd.
I have a follow-up question to that, and I don't mean to seem adversarial here at all. Local foods is something that I am very interested in also. I think it's a great program. I read an article in National Geographic, which I love that magazine, and it talked about the issue that you're talking about transporting vegetables from Belize or someplace. And the argument was made that it actually produces less CO2 to have the efficient large farms producing the you know, the vegetables and things and shipping them than it does to grow them locally because of the efficiency of the large farms. Now, I mentioned earlier, my wife's from central Kansas, and you know, the ditch-to-ditch farming is something that I've really had a problem with for a lot of reasons, including habitat for animals and things. But the argument was made in this National Geographic article that in terms of damage to the environment, it's more efficient to ship these vegetables and fruits long distances in large containers than to have an army of smaller vehicles transporting them locally. I was astounded at that, but I don't see anybody really addressing that argument yet, and I'm not taking one side or the other. I'm just throwing it out here as an idea for discussion.
Well, certainly, if cost-benefit analysis could be done, you know, full cost-benefit analysis could be done on food production globally, it'd be really interesting to see how that turned out. The proportion of food that we eat that's local versus the food proportion that we eat that gets shipped in, obviously, is a huge determinant on that very fact. Most of the farmers that I know working in the area don't use mechanization and drive their pickup truck to the market on Saturday mornings. It probably represents, by weight, 0.001% of the food that we consume here. So it's difficult to have that conversation because one so far outweighs the other in terms of market share. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Large-scale agribusiness does do a more efficient job at producing calories. It's just the external effects that large scale.
Actually, the argument was made in the National Geographic article that in terms of environmental impact, that large-scale production is less damaging to the environment than local food production, because the pickup trucks driving to the farmer's market will produce more CO2 emissions than the train or ship or whatever it is that transports the food in. Now, there's a whole other argument on the quality of food, and I understand that. I buy from my neighbors, okay? But I don't think it's a conclusion that you can assume that by encouraging local foods, it may feel good and seem right, but in terms of absolute CO2 production, it may not be the right answer. And I don't have the expertise to address that one way or the other, but I just hate to see us go down a route without even considering getting the information.
I think getting the information is where we'll run into problems.
Okay.
A future comment, well, I guess we do need to come to the mic. Scott just pointed out, because it is recorded, so it might sound a little muffled, I guess, on the recording. Commissioner, did you have a follow-up on that, Rick?
I was just going to say, I would assume that shipping produce from Chile it would be far more expensive or damaging somehow, but you know, from what I've read, you've got competing scientists saying different things on this, and so I hate to jump into this as a foregone conclusion, because I don't have the expertise to know that, but I am glad to hear that the distribution system locally is more efficient. And I didn't mean to sound condescending about people bringing their pickup trucks in. That's not it at all. I just there are just a lot of numbers that need to be crunched about that.
My name is Daniel Poole again. No, and I am not in any position to really be an authority on this. and I only know, like you, what I read and things like that. But I also know, have read this, that with local food systems, you usually get a higher variety of foods also, which improves the environment in other ways also. Small farmers, I think if you look at how Amish farmers farm, because they farm to feed themselves as well as the greater community, they have greater varieties. They actually put out more food per acre on small farms than the big 1,000, 3,000 acre farms. Actually, they do put out more food. So that should be taken into the equation too. So.
Stan, did you have
a question? I was just gonna say, Rick, that I've read recently a similar study that suggested that the economies of scale, if you're looking at just things like CO2, you may get better environmental benefit of growing at a large scale and shipping with large containers like you get on a train or a semi-truck. And perhaps of an example would be, I love going out to the Pendleton farm and picking fresh asparagus. But if you have 10,000 cars going out there to pick 1 or 2 pounds of asparagus, and then those 10,000 cars drive to a separate location to buy their groceries, you've essentially created 10,000 extra trips, and the emissions from those 10,000 vehicles going out there. And at the local level, you're typically not buying in a large quantity, you're buying in a small quantity. So you do that 10,000 extra vehicle trips every week. It starts adding up above the ship that ships in millions of pounds of asparagus, brings it in on a rail line at a very reduced rate of emissions, and then hauls it to the store in a semi-truck. And so there's a lot of considerations and a lot of things that are just now being looked at and considered on things like local food production. And so while my gut says we need to be encouraging it, and I like it personally, I like going to the U-Pick blueberry place out by Kansas City. I like going to U-Pick strawberries. I like going to the Pendleton farm. I like taking my kids out to the Shockey pumpkin patch. But when you start having 25,000 people doing that, then those efficiencies are lost that the economies of scale of doing on a mass scale regain. And so those are some of the competing things that I think you see out there.
I think we could probably chase our tail on on this, but it's a good point, Rick. I mean, it sounds good, but I don't know. Go ahead, next speaker. Let's move along.
Hi, I'm Clint Hornberger. I serve on the Douglas County Farm Bureau Board, and I also serve on the Douglas County Food Policy Council. My comments don't reflect either one of those this evening, but I just figured I'd tell you. I guess first off, Douglas County Farm Bureau's we've reviewed the document, the Public Policy Committee. We currently kind of like the document the way it is. Our only concern is that there won't be any language added into the document that will hinder or deter modern production agriculture as it stands today in Douglas County. And I don't see you guys as doing something like that. That's our only concern, and we have no further concerns with the document than that. And then just to speak a little bit on the whether it should be on the economic in the economic chapter, in the environmental chapter. It's my feeling that the way it's stated in the environmental chapter currently is about as perfect as you could have. It's basically just stated that it's an important thing, and we kind of need to have it. I would love to see a more in-depth portion in the economic chapter, and I think that's where you can leave it in both, as Daniel said, and get a little more in depth as to what that local food program or system should should be in the economic chapter. I think it should be in both. That's all.
Thank you, Clint. Mm-hmm. Any questions for the speaker? Yes. Commissioner Harris, yeah.
Quick question about your first comment about modern agricultural methods.
Mm-hmm.
We received a comment, I think it was from the League, about encouraging organic methods of farming, gardening and farming. Would you have an objection to that being in there as long as it didn't say and prohibit other types?
Personally, I wouldn't have a problem with it as far as when we make decisions as a board, so I'd have to bring that before the board, and I'll bring this meeting this evening before the board as well. But, I mean, we're not, we kind of like to say we speak for production agriculture, but we also speak for all agriculture. So so we're not out there deterring anybody from organic production agriculture if that's what they choose to do. So, no, I really wouldn't see why we would have a problem with that, as long as there's nothing in there that that would say, you know, people should do organic over modern production agriculture, as long as it doesn't say that. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, that people should plant organic if they want to. So, mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Clint. Appreciate it. Next speaker, please. Has everyone spoke? I think. Well, I think we're going to leave it open, correct, and public. Is that with the plan? And public comment will continue until our June meeting.
I think the idea was public. We stopped public comment at 10 a.m. Monday.
Oh, okay.
For this meeting, so you all had the comments, and now we need to make some decision about process. I think. And we've talked a little bit with Lisa, who's been the chair of that subcommittee, about, you know, whether or not the scope of comments here tonight would demand that the CPC get back together. And I think it would personally, that we take this information, digest it, go back with the Planning Commission subcommittee, and then when we're ready to bring this back to the Planning Commission, we do so and try to do that within, you know, by June, I would hope. What we like to do is get a new draft prepared, try to get 20 to 30 days of public time on our website with, you know, an email to our stakeholders so that whether it's June or July, they've got a little bit of time to review it and then come prepared to speak at the next formal hearing on the chapter. So I would, we're not asking for action tonight. You're okay to direct us to do that if that's the commission's desire, and we'll go about that task.
Commissioner Harris, do you want to, it's your committee, would you like to chime in on direction?
Yes, and I had a few other comments too about public comment that was given before, but sure. About the process, yes, I think having the CPC meet once to think about all the different comments we've received and vet it out among us, come up with new language to bring to the Planning Commission seems appropriate and helpful.
Okay. So did you have a question for one of the speakers or just for staff or
No, it was
discussion?
Just for discussion.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do I need to close the public comment then? I need a motion to close it. I know that. Is there a motion to close the public comment?
I would so move to close the public comment.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Harris. All those in, yes? Absolutely.
I don't want to be disruptive, but I wanted to thank you all for letting me challenge you about this particular chapter, and I think you gave good, thoughtful responses about the, not the chapter, but the particular provisions about the local food program, about having it both here and in Chapter 12. So I appreciate you letting me challenge on that, and I think you all did well.
Oh, great. No, that's perfect. All those in favor, please raise your hand. We are 7-0. Motion carries. Thank you guys for commenting, and we will discuss a little bit more up here on this. Commissioner Harris.
Okay, great. I took some notes on the written public comments that we received, and I'd like to get the commission's opinions about the changes that were proposed proposed, because then the, our committee then will know which direction to go as we talk about it. There was a comment about bike paths along heritage corridors, and Amy said that she's talked with Judy Billings about that, and that she's really interested in having signage when those two areas intersect, if there's a historic area and an environmental area, that you have some marker and some recognition of that. Marilyn Hall had asked about green spaces for children to play and safe routes to school. I don't know, it seems to me that for green spaces, that would be more addressed in our in parks rather than environment. Although the environmental chapter could have a nod to parks being places where people can be healthy, increase their health. There was also some request for some wording about cost benefits for active transportation. I think what she was just saying is that there are other benefits besides CO2, there are health benefits. I don't have a problem with adding that to the language. I think I'll just go through these and say what I think, and then you can chime in if you think differently. I would like to talk about Barbara Clark's comments about this new study for the aggregate mapping and whether we want to add some language or a map that we will have an overlay so that we'll know where we have areas that have soil and sand and gravel in the same place, high quality soil. Okay. Let's see. The League had a lot of comments. Should I go through those, or do you want to have just say if you have any concerns about any of them?
I mean, my thought, I mean, it depends again what the process wants to be. I mean, I have some general comments about, but lots of it just comes down to the wording of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why I asked at mid-month, I asked that question. Are we at the point we want to discuss the wording? And that's how I see some of these issues. I mean, I think I'd rather see your committee come back mm-hmm. with a document that you guys agree with, you know, and then we can take the time to wordsmith it.
Okay.
That's good would be my thought. I mean, because my general comment was, as I read through this, I mean, and we've got two of the best wordsmithers on there, but you know, of course you always have the should versus shall stuff, but you know, we do a lot of, I was listing all the verbs, we have promote and we have consider, we have encourage and provide. Sometimes we say provide, sometimes we say encourage, sometimes we say encourage and provide. Sometimes we say, of course, develop regulations, develop incentives. Sometimes we say develop regulations and incentives. Sometimes we say manage, sometimes we say properly manage. Sometimes we say preserve, sometimes we say protect, sometimes we say preserve and protect. And it may be every, I mean, I think, and then there's some statements we make in here, some all things we should do, but like 6.7 on the local food says, the city of Lawrence and Douglas County, along with the stakeholders, will support a local food program. And that's a pretty strong statement, we will support, instead of saying we should. You know, other places we say it should be developed, we should encourage. That's a statement of fact, I think. So there's a lot of comments like that, and I'm sure you, I mean, there's some of these that I, for example, would, we say develop regulations. I might want to wordsmith it to say develop regulations and incentives. And there's other places where we say, I don't know why we say manage and properly manage. I don't know if those are the same terms, but I mean, I think we do need to take one run through this again and kind of look at each one of those, because I mean, overall, I support most of these things. I mean, but there's going to be some of those that I might, you know, we have developed regulations and incentives for the use of renewable energy sources, you know, okay. I mean, that's probably good.
Mm-hmm.
But other places, we just say we're going to develop regulations, but we never talk about incentives. And I don't know if that's intentional or if that was a conscious decision by the committee or not. And so if you guys could take a look at that when you go through, I think that would help me kind of decide, you know, because some of those I might suggest wordsmithing on, but if you guys have good reasons why you said it, that's fine. I mean, I'll probably go with it, but.
Okay, that is very helpful.
Stan?
Question to kind of follow up on that.
Kind of a question for staff. Can you comment on the process for this? How should I say this? What's going to be the approval process? Are we writing this and then it goes to the city commission so they ultimately approve it?
This is a chapter of Horizon 2020, which is a joint comprehensive plan. You're going to pass a version as the planning commission, as the comprehensive plan for the city and county. It's not effective until the city and county commissions adopt it as well.
So the city and county commissions will both have an opportunity to adopt.
Yes. In the end, all three need to agree on this chapter.
And the reason I ask that question, and here's why it follows on to Brad's, is my personal feeling was that we should be saying that we should consider. And it seemed to be the will of the committee to go with more strong statements, to say shall. We should, must do this. We will do this. We should. As a non-elected board, I don't think we should be setting policy like that. I think that should be left up to the city and county commission. They're the elected ones. They're the ones who set real policy. But if we are writing this with the understanding that we're basically writing the draft for them to ultimately approve, then it probably would be more appropriate to use some of that stronger language that makes it appear like mandates instead of just considerations. Is that accurate in what I'm saying?
Mr. Miller can correct me when I go astray, because I'm not an attorney, one of few in the room, but the comprehensive plan is a little bit different animal. I know. It's a little bit different animal than what you're typically sitting as, because you actually adopt the comprehensive plan. The state statute has different language for comprehensive plan than it does rezoning efforts. In rezonings and special use permits and things, you actually make a recommendation as an advisory committee to the city commission or county commission. With the comprehensive plan, the statute language has words that it's adopted by the planning commission, but it's not effective until governing body approval. So while the practical standpoint is that we believe it takes all three bodies to agree on it. So it does set out the goals and policy statements for the region. But in this role, the legislature gives the planning commission a little more authority and weight in planning the comprehensive plan document than on zoning matters.
And for the record, I think we should use the stronger language. John's about to say something. He wants to say something.
The only thing I disagree with Mr. McCullough on is that while the planning commission adopts the plan, it is still ultimately up to the respective governing bodies to also do so. So all three parties don't have to agree. If the governing body of Douglas County and the governing body of the city agree, they may be slightly different. That agreement may be different than what the planning commission has adopted and recommended for their approval.
Well, if we were to approve it and the county commission approved it and the city commission did not, would it be part of Horizon 2020? It would not. So it takes all three bodies to approve it for it to officially become part of Horizon 2020?
We would be left with several meetings at the staff level to determine the answer to
that. I wish Sheila were here. How many times has a chapter been passed on the first reading?
Well, the practice is we keep going back through the process until we either it doesn't happen in a very proactive way, or it does happen by getting that alignment between the governing bodies.
interesting.
Takes several runs at it.
Just to be clear, I think there should be some of these should be stronger than others. I mean, I think that's what we should. I just want to be sure the ones that are stronger were intentionally stronger, and I'm sure this was written over different times at different points, and I just want to be sure we go through and. Because some of those I might not agree with the stronger language and someone else might. So I just want to be sure the committee, when it comes back to us, is giving us their recommendation on the ones that, on that language.
Who's on the committee? Stan, Chuck, Kinsey, Chuck. Okay, so there's four up here. Okay, I'm just curious. I knew.
We outnumber you.
For now.
For now, tonight.
Any other comments for Lisa? Lisa, did you have more?
I'm interested in any more general comments like that that would help us in our thinking as we go through it.
Rick, did you?
I had a question, and it's about the process also. One of the things, we've discussed about making assumptions about environmental impact of local foods, and I don't mean to restrict my comments just to that, but my question is, I assume that we have some of the best science in the nation available at KU. Have we tried to include professional expertise in the draft of this? I mean, I'm not part of the committee, so I'd.
Yes, go ahead.
We met early on with each topic and identified stakeholders and experts within the community and brought them in to do a meeting with us to educate us before we wrote the policies, and then they have all been emailed copies of the draft as well.
Okay, so in terms of environmental impact of some of the policies, you've gotten opinions from them that local food production is less environmentally.
Well, I don't think that the chapter in any way specifically advocates for any specific type of program. I know that there is, for example, a section that says we encourage local foods, but it doesn't necessarily say how that would be utilized or to what amount or capacity. In the same way under our energy issues, we talk about the fact that we appreciate alternative types of energy, but we don't necessarily encourage any specific type, to leave it broad enough so that when there's a time to come in with specific issues that can be addressed at another location. But I don't think that our chapter specifically says specific programs that we want to fall into place.
Okay, the way I read it, I thought, and I'll go back to local foods, that you were absolutely encouraging it.
We encourage it.
It says we'll support a local
we'll
food
support.
Program.
I mean, I.
We support.
And if that's our policy, that's fine. But my only question was, in that situation, do we have input from the experts on that sort of thing to know that that's an environmentally responsible thing to say we will do?
When we were talking about local foods in the environmental chapter, we're putting it in the context of the human-built environment, and we're talking about not just the idea of cutting down CO2 emissions when we're talking about the production of tomatoes or asparagus. We're talking about the advantages to the community and to people's health, and the diversity of food, the access to, going to local farms, and those community strengths as part of our built environment, and not just CO2 emissions, not just that focus. We were looking at a broader focus when we put it in the built environment.
Okay, can I make a follow-up comment?
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure that I'm real clear for the record and for the rest of the commission here. I love the fact that my neighbors grow asparagus and strawberries, and I get fresh corn. And I understand entirely that the quality and diversity of the food that I get from my neighbors is exceptional. And in terms of enjoying local food production, it's fabulous, and I'm glad they do it. On the other hand, we have language in here that says we're going to reduce automobile miles driven. That's a goal. if we're encouraging people to drive out and pick their own strawberries, is that contrary to that other goal? How do you resolve that? And you know, Stan's example of, you know, 10,000 people driving out to pick asparagus is a good one. And as much as I love local food and I love the production of my neighbors, I also recognize that if everybody drove out there to enjoy it, it might not be a really environmentally responsible thing to do. And I feel like I'm kind of battling against warm puppies here.
Well,
even suggesting
about
this.
It.
And I sure. don't mean to. I don't mean People. To sound like a villain, but I'm hoping that in formulating the policies, that we have the right data and numbers so that we know when we use strong language, and I think we should, if we're formulating a policy that goes up to the city and county commissions, it ought to be a policy.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know, I think it shouldn't be wishy-washy. It should use stronger language. I just hope that when we use that language, that we've got something to back it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, my initial thought is, I think, in my opinion, you're overthinking it. I mean, we say, for example, I just picked one, protect subsurface water resources. Well, if we know there's someplace in the county underneath farmland, those contaminated subsurface water resources, so you can make the argument, well, that's a bad goal, to protect subsurface water resources, because we have some subsurface water resources that shouldn't be protected, and therefore, you know, I think we want to set good goals. I mean, encourage local food doesn't, local food program doesn't mean encourage a local food program to the extent that we drive, you know, that we go to any certain extent and, you know, close down all supermarkets and, you know, or whatever. I mean, so I think this document is a very overarching policy document, and that it can have, you can, anytime you do something, you have multiple goals that are often crossed with each other, you know, and that's, so you know, that's okay.
And how do you apply it?
Well, these are the goals. You apply it when you draft the policies and the incentive, and that's why I think you have to, that's why some of these things make a big difference. I mean, you apply it when you set up the rules and the regulations, and that's the debate we've had overall. I mean, someone out here said we should have more qualitative measures. Develop regulations and incentives to protect high quality farmland. Class 1 and Class 2 soils. Okay. Well, don't forget, as people mentioned a lot, by the way, that conflicts maybe with Chapter 7 of Horizon 2020, which says we need industrial space next to the turnpike. So, but it doesn't say we preserve all of it, doesn't say we preserve 5% of it, doesn't say we preserve all of it. These are the overarching goals. And that's what makes Horizon 2020 the first step in the whole process. And there's, you've seen it 100 times when we've been up here, on, you know, that Chapter 7 conflicts with Chapter 12, and two places in Chapter 7 conflict with itself. And you know, Jane Eldridge is great at coming up with the way our chapters conflict. And people are great at making these chapters say what they want them to say. But to me, we're setting very, very high level, broad goals here. And we're not picking sides, but that's my opinion. So I differ in the way I read this.
Mm-hmm. Stan, and then, oh, I'm sorry, Lisa. Stan, then Lisa.
Well, on the local food program, I think the problem there is that we don't really have a good definition of what that is. What I think a local food program is may be different than what you think it is versus what other commentators think it is. We don't have that defined in the glossary. We don't. I think that to say so strongly that we will support something like that, well, what are we saying that we're going to support? As you go through and read this, I would encourage you, I wish the other commissioners were here to hear this. There's things in here that will cost money to achieve and could cost substantial money, where we say we shall go out and inventory wetlands. We shall go out and create an inventory of and map the woodland areas in the county, that we'll go out and map the prairie areas, that we're going to identify and map critical habitat areas. Those all come with a price tag. And I guess that's where I start getting uncomfortable, in particular with the strong shall language, that we're saying we will do that, because that's where I don't feel I have the authority. If the city commission and the county commission think that yes, we should do that, then we've got the language here for them. But I still, it makes me uncomfortable to have that strong shall language in things like that, that say identify map areas. That's not a we should, it's a firm statement. And on those firm statements that have a dollar tied to them, I personally am uncomfortable with it, but I still think we have a good draft to work from.
But it won't go into effect until the city and county commission. I mean, just like a zoning recommendation.
That's why I asked that question a while ago.
I mean, so I think we suggest what we think it should be, and if they disagree, they can change the shall to the should.
Right.
Yes. And, I mean, I think that's a big decision for them.
Commissioner Harris.
On food policy, here are the thoughts that I had to bring back to the committee, that we beef up that section. We consult the Food Policy Committee for a definition, that we, if it's not already in there, increase the language about the benefits that you get from a system like that, not only CO2, but the health benefits, diversity of food, et cetera, that we talked about tonight. And then also add language on creating or encouraging a local food distribution system that could create transportation efficiencies. And
I can't help myself but respond to Brad. I'm sorry.
Of course, yeah.
the only thing I would say is this is really important policy, and I understand that, and I really appreciate the amount of work that's been put into this draft. Okay. I personally think that if you're going to draft a policy statement, that it ought to be a policy instead of saying we should consider a policy in the future, or we should consider adopting a policy. It needs to be an affirmative statement of policy. I also think that even though it's up to the governing bodies to adopt this, I think our charge is to take them something that takes a stand. And so I'm not sure that I would go with shall language that Stan's talking about. But I think, you know, using language that adopts a stance is important here. I also think that adopting a chapter that is either internally, has goals that are either internally in conflict or conflict with other chapters of Horizon 2020 is a virtual invitation to render it meaningless by attorneys standing at the podium saying these are in conflict, and that to the extent that we can, we should minimize those conflicts.
Any other comments, Stan?
I think we're there, but I just wanted to add my two cents on. I think it should be the committee's responsibility to take these initial comments and come back with another draft to present to the commission as a whole. That these initial comments that we received, I think that, and that's the thought process, I believe we're the path we're moving down, but I think we should take on that responsibility to take these initial comments. I'm kind of surprised too that we didn't get very many comments. That's a good thing. I'm really pleased, but I'm kind of surprised.
I would just also like to say that Amy didn't think herself. She did a great job. She wrote a lot of this, so I'm Thank you.
And Mary?
Yes. Amy thanked Mary. Amy's but nobody thanked Amy. And but thanks, Mary. Staff did a really good job. So,
Lisa.
I want to ask Hank a question. Sorry to put you on the spot. Is the chamber going to comment on this chapter?
Excuse me, I even let down my tie because I didn't check out. Long day, too. We thought that it would be best to listen in tonight to see what public comment was, knowing that there was going to be a review of this then in all likelihood, and then another trip here. Overall, I think that we have most of the same general feelings that we've heard expressed here tonight. There are some specific issues of shall, will, what does that mean exactly? And then when you go back and review it against some of the other chapters, there were some conflicts that we were having problems with. And again, I see that between commissioners, there still are some issues back and forth between which do we really mean in this regard? And then what overall, though, I think as Amy and Mary have put this down on paper along with the committee, overviewing their writing, we've got a good beginning point, and that's what I thought tonight was an opportunity to listen and hear comments. I've taken a couple of pages of notes to ask about and take back to committees that might have some interest in these areas, but the process goes on, and we'll have another step in this process in June, and with perhaps a chance to address anything particularly that we see that we're concerned with as it comes back. But the shalls and wills, and that was the question that I had about how do we pay for some of the things that we're admonishing the city and the county to do? Because I get to sit with the city and county commissions at many meetings, hearing them anguish over how are we going to pay for the things that we have to do, like fix Iowa Street and take care of the schools or take care of the county road or a bridge. And now we're going to shall do some of these other things that will cost money. But that just comes from a sensitivity that I've gained in the last year and a half of going to a lot of meetings. So that's not critical of this process. It's just saying, I know they'll have that same kind of a issue of trying to figure out how to spend money on some things that aren't allocated, that funds aren't allocated for at this time. The process is going along, and we just wanted to listen and hear where you felt like things are tonight. So I've been writing furiously back here.
Thank you. That helps, and your other comments help, too. We want to have a sense of what the chamber's thinking about so that we get all the comments at the same time.
I understand that. I understand that. And again, I thought, and if that's I'll take responsibility for not writing specific response to what was in there. I wasn't sure where this group, because I wasn't in on the initial comments, and I haven't taken part in too many of your studies of other chapters up to this point. So I'm kind of new at this particular point of adding this chapter or how it reflects back on another chapter. I'm relatively new at that and in watching your process. Mm-hmm. I'm new at this in terms of watching how you work through the procedure, so I wanted to see how it happened.
Sure.
There wouldn't be anything boldly in opposition to anything that was presented here in this chapter at all. I mean, there's nothing that we're going to rise up and go, what are you talking about, or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So the Farm Bureau is here. That's good. We're interested that we heard from the sustainability group that they were here, that the Food Council was here working with those groups and the local food groups and a number of different areas in the community and are excited about a new sustainability director. So we've got lots of things in the same basket here, and now we've got to proceed to work through them and figure out how we can work it out together.
Thank you, Hank.
Any other comments? I think it shows great work, guys, so far. Thank you for your time. I'm sure there's been a lot of hours, man hours. Poured into
women
this.
Hours.
Women hours, mostly women hours. but thank you. All right. I guess we're okay to move on to our item number 8, floodplain management regulations. Thank you, everybody that showed up. Appreciate it.
Yep. And
this is just an FYI. Go ahead.
It's an initiation.
Did you have a presentation?
I'm just going to speak very briefly.
Okay.
I was waiting. Item number 8 is for initiation of 2 text amendments, one to the city code and one to the county code regarding floodplain management regulations. FEMA has recently completed a reevaluation of our firm maps, our floodplain maps. We have received the preliminary maps. We're in the process of getting a website set up, getting some layers on our GIS system, and doing some public outreach. As part of this, we are required to amend our floodplain regulations, primarily with the new FEMA firm effective date, which will be August 5th, 2010. Since the city's floodplain regulations were recently amended, and they were therefore in compliance with the state model ordinance, we will only, we think, have to change the date for the city text amendment. The county code hasn't been amended for a number of years, and we have already identified that there will be a couple items that we'll be required to do in addition to changing the date in order for it to come into compliance with the state model ordinance. That's about it. We will bring specific language back to you in June at your Planning Commission meeting. We will also have to send both of those text amendments and their language to the state. The State Division of Water Resources will need to sign off on them and approve the language. Ultimately, the city and county commissions will see the respective text amendments.
Amy, when they send these over, do they give you a breakdown from the November 7th, 2001 maps, the differences that have occurred? Or is it just adding an aerial and changing the date? Is that what they're doing? Or?
No, they actually did what was called a reevaluation. It was not a complete restudy. They did not reevaluate base flood elevations. They did not make major changes to the floodway. We provided them with our LIDAR data and our most up-to-date data. And essentially what these maps
LIDAR.
LIDAR, and I couldn't tell you what it stands for, but it's basically the aerials that were flown. But it gives them great contour information. And this restudy is basically a redelineation based on that latest LIDAR data. They give us the map. They don't
That's
tell
it.
Us.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. But we are... At least for the city, we are anticipating doing some analysis based on properties that may not have been in, that might be put in, properties that were in, that are coming out, and working on some public outreach efforts, doing press release, contacting those property owners.
Yeah, I was just thinking about North Lawrence with some of the stormwater improvements that...
And you have to keep in mind that there is a bit of a difference between the stormwater and the floodplain. A stormwater
right, but I'm just
improvement
thinking,
might not always.
Would there be anything that would?
We've done.
The city engineers are anticipating any differences in these maps.
We have done some preliminary looks at the maps. We do not see any sweeping changes.
Okay, probably just property specific. Just curious. As North Lawrence, there is quite a bit of property in the floodplain up there. So, is this 2 separate motions?
That would probably be good.
Okay. Any other discussion? I'm sorry. Kinsey? Mr. Miller? Public comment?
Yes. This is scheduled as a public hearing item.
Is anyone from the public wishes to speak? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion.
I move we close public comment.
Is there a second? Seconded by Commissioner Hurd.
And
all those in favor?
Do we really have to take public comment when there's nobody sitting in the room?
I believe the record should reflect that it was scheduled for a public hearing, that you opened up for public comment, and there was no one present.
Could the chairman just say, let the record show that there's nobody in here to give public comment, so we're not going to open it up? There's nobody in the room.
I would recommend that you still, if it's a public hearing item, that you still have asked for public comment. Now, whether it should be a public hearing item is a discussion that staff and I can have. But.
Okay. Can we vote? All those in favor to close public comment? Motion carries 7-0. Mr. Singleton.
I move that we ask staff to initiate a text amendment regarding the floodplains to the land development code of the city of Lawrence.
Seconded by Commissioner Hurd. Discussion? All those in favor? Motion carries 7-0.
I move, if I may, that we ask staff to initiate a text amendment regarding floodplain management regulations to the code of the county of Douglas, of the state of Kansas.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
To the county?
I'm not sure what I'm seconding.
To the county of Douglas of the state of Kansas?
Code.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor? Motion carries 7-0. Old business, new business? Anything, Scott?
No, sir.
We adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you.